I didn't hear anybody talk ever on the Gas Authority about an approach to the Royalty Board or anything like that kind of a forum where people would have, under the legislation, an opportunity to go before a committee. There would be public hearings, proper review. For those of you with long-term memories, the Royalty Board was an outgrowth of the El Petco decision. I would prefer we not repeat that. The announcement of Bechtel as a contractor, frankly, did nothing to inspire me. I lived here in the pipeline days. I'm sorry. I remember Bechtel. The first thing they did was bring in all outside contractors. I'd suggest to you that until somebody shows me the agreement that the union hiring hall isn't going to be under the Golden Gate Bridge, I remain very skeptical. And so on. I guess I'm concerned very much about there's no commitment I've heard for Alaska workers, Alaska contractors. I have examined the draft legislation. It was at hearings, but never got a chance to testify during the last session. Impacted communities. Not all of them received money. Galcana, Glen Allen, Copper Center are not on that list. Sorry, the pipeline goes right through those communities. As I understand the deal also, in looking at the benefits presentation today, I saw at least two major problems. Looked to me like two-thirds of the claim benefits flow out of basically oil-related effects that have to do with gas production, not with gas sales. Now, I used to make my living as a reservoir engineer. And when somebody starts telling me those big of numbers, I've got to ask, where did those numbers come from? And based on my own experience, those look to be a little optimistic to me. And the last I heard, CSX Corporation is not in the reservoir engineering business. And Bechtel is certainly not. So I'd like to know what the source of that is. As I understand the deal on the permanent fund, it seems to be transferring money to local governments in this thing. And I don't think you can take money away in royalty from the permanent fund and give it to local governments, especially if things like utilidors and grain elevators and other things get built with that money. And finally, I, again, I'm not a financial person, but it seems to me that the Port Authority as a state entity puts the state at risk in terms of both its credit and the principal of the permanent fund when you start talking multi-billions of dollars. In any case, I just really like to look at a real benefit analysis of that gas line. I hope over the next couple legislative sessions that you will take the time to do that. I assure you I will be a good, loyal citizen and a hearing groupie and show up and try to find out the answer to some of those questions. And then finally, I guess I just really urge you that in the meantime, why don't we just sort of concentrate on getting on with this, picking some good companies to come into Alaska to replace ARCO, because that's where I'm at, and that's what I'd like to see done. And with that, I'll shut up.
Would you be more comfortable if picking the good companies occurred before the fact instead of after the fact?
I don't mind it after the fact at all, Senator. I would like the state to have some say as to who they are. I've looked down the list of maybe 19 or 20 companies that seem to me to meet the criteria financially. And some of those companies we know here in Alaska, some of those companies we don't. I guess it's sort of almost an interview type process. I kidded at one point that this was sort of like picking the homecoming queen or something, you know. And you know, maybe we ought to have an interview process, and we kind of see how they fit. You know, are they going to work with us as part of what goes on here in Alaska? And I think that's a very reasonable thing to think about. I'm really encouraged, and I really don't think we need to formalize that because, frankly, any company that's going to drop billions of bucks into Alaska is going to think real long and hard about what kind of a relationship it can establish here. And if it's not comfortable with the relationship with BP, with the other players in the industry here, and more importantly with the citizens and the government of Alaska, it's not going to come. So I don't see we run a big risk of getting any bad actors or something like that, but I really would like it to be a more conscious decision maybe on the part of the state.
But the homecoming queen shouldn't just be the head chair.
I'm not going to get into selection criteria with you, but I obviously, because of my background, feel very strongly in this case that the fact that ARCO is going away sets at least a standard of corporate citizenship that I would hope that the people be measured against. And if they don't measure up, maybe that ought to be said.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Harold, if you're now sitting as the CEO of a Philips or a Philips Plus, knowing what you know now from what you've seen of this deal, would you be willing to go to your stockholder and say, hey, here's a good deal. Let's get that $175,000.
I can't visualize a better circumstance to make this deal under. It hasn't been talked about much, but I'm a private citizen now, and I don't own stock in any of these guys, so I can say what I think. It's my opinion that BP gave up something very significant by committing to divestiture, and nobody's really talked about it. But the difference between selling an asset and selling an asset under order is a very different price, and BP gave up that differential in agreeing to this. If I was Philips, I would like to buy it under orders to sell. So, I mean, that's the only way I can look at this. Mm-hmm. That I can't see a better shot than this.
Appreciate your candor.
Thank you. How much did that cost us in the short term? If we lost a $5 billion commitment to invest, there's a whole other direction this could have gone, mm-hmm. and that was to simply require more investment and not anything to do with divestiture. That was ideologically different than everybody decided to go. But I just, sometimes I sit and wonder what the cost of the ideology of divestiture is in terms of actual activity. Or maybe there isn't any cost.
I can't do that trade-off for you, Senator. I believe that the state reasonably had long-term concerns about where this merger might lead, just letting it happen. And so I think I've got to argue it was worth the time to at least explore and in this case, negotiate to an agreement. I've got to argue that was right. On the other hand, my concern is that right now, you know, maybe it's $1 million a month right now, but maybe that rate accelerates and maybe it starts to accumulate. And, you know, by next year, all I'm trying to say is 6 months from now, it could be a really, you know, bigger number that would get everybody's attention. And I just don't want to get caught in that situation. If somehow waiting a week or 2 weeks improves your decision, it's worth it, you know. But if you're going to wait a number of months, I would suggest to you, you would really have to convince me there was a pretty big increase in value.
Well, I mean, we are not a decision maker per se in driving the process. Obviously, the executive branch drives the process.
Where your comfort level, though, is very important. I mean, the sense of where the legislature is or isn't on this deal is very important in terms of the confidence. And again, it's like a board of directors. If the board isn't confident in the deal, that tells you something.
Further questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Tom Lakish. Okay. Richard Feinberg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For members of the committee and legislators, I've spent a good portion of my 30 years in the state watching oil and gas development. In recent years, as you know, I have consulted primarily for government and non-profit groups on economic and environmental issues related to oil development. Some describe the legislative process as sausage making, And I have to congratulate your committee for elucidating excellently some aspects of the Sausage Factory without even making a law. Your questions today have identified two bits of gristle that particularly sicken me. And so you know where I am coming from. It will not surprise you. I am speaking from outrage, and I'm going to try to contain that outrage and try to be constructive. But I would be remiss if I did not state what may be obvious to you. Let me get to the two examples. I'm under questioning from the committee. Commissioner Shively acknowledged. That outrage relates to the merger, not the two pieces of gristle that you found today and the charter. The proposed charter, Commissioner Shively told you, seems to lack a savings clause. The little phrase that states the grant does not abrogate or otherwise undermine state laws. Secondly, the drafters admit that they chose to describe the 175,000 barrels of oil that are required to be divested, quite a treasure chest. Well, in the terms it chose, has two different legal meanings. And it has hung up amateurs like myself as well as professionals in trying to interpret in what BP describes as 2 weeks to review. In fact, as of tomorrow night, we will be to 14 days. We're short more than 5% that time, but hell, who's counting? But while we try to wade through, what does working interest ownership mean when it apparently has two definitions, and those of us trained in state service use a different one from BP? What, pray tell, have the merger teams of the state, the vaunted experts, who were probably not there, and the highly paid consultants been doing for 7 months? And what are we doing here tonight? We're not in kindergarten, for God's sakes. It will not surprise you to hear that I'm concerned about the pipeline, and I will just state briefly that in June and in April, in June when I spoke to you, I fully believed there would be some consideration of pipeline divestiture issues. Apparently, there hasn't been much. Now, that may surprise you because divestiture is in the charter, but not, in my estimation, what we need. I should make it clear that I'm not talking about a detail. I am talking about the future of the industry that has more than any other shaped the state's recent destiny and will continue to do so for better or for worse for many years to come. What particularly strikes me and what I was amazed by on Tuesday night was the slide that the governor's team used to present the governor's conditions. It was the fifth slide of their presentation, and it contained the statement, the governor's conditions on competition, and it includes, quote, tariff reduction or divestiture on taps was on the slide. Several of us, and I did not ask the question, I spotted it, said, wait a minute, or divestiture. That was not in the governor's August 23rd speech. And a citizen asked a question, and the one comment the governor made all night, and the attorney general responded the same way, they specifically told the citizen he was mistaken that divestiture of the pipeline was discussed on August the 23rd. It is not in the speech. It is not in the press release. And if any of you heard it, and if I'm wrong, I will be happy to apologize to the governor and the attorney general, but I believe they misled the public, and again, we've got little time for review. Now, I had prepared for that night, and I had no time to discuss it. Before the slide came out, it so happened I was going to talk about divestiture, because I think the divestiture we've got, which is partial divestiture, is not the right answer and is not going to work. I may be right, I might be wrong, but again, this is the debate we should have had before the charter was signed, not under the clock, and I am flatly outraged. I am embarrassed for my state that did this. And I want to make it clear that although I have tried to participate as a good citizen, I want no part of this process. And I think you know I generally try to footnote and bring voluminous documents. You've had to go through them, and you've borne with me on it. I must say that I'm burned out. I can't do it anymore. But you ought to know something is terribly wrong. We don't live in Animal Farm. This isn't 1984. You don't just add something later. I think that is ridiculous. But let me get to the substance. Specifically, because or divestiture was added August the 23rd, or was not in on August the 23rd, it's not until November the 5th that it entered radar screens of the public generally that we need to deal with it. And I think the remedy the state chose, partial divestiture, is the wrong answer. A producer-owned pipeline is an inadequate remedy that's not likely to work. And I believe the TAPS is the example of it. And it is not likely to work for several reasons. First of all, it's very complex to do legally. As I'm sure Representative Petula can tell you, the contracts are complicated. If you could do it, you can't balance because, by definition, the state is a shipper of royalty oil and you can't get to balance. So the solution that will give Chevron or give Anadarko a piece of the pipeline just ain't going to work. It's a moving target. If you do get it, and Senator Pierce got it today, the percentages change. It's not going to work. The result is we'll leave, and primarily at the end of the day, any prospective developer is still stranded because that person isn't going to buy in without a share of the pipeline. Now, I had prepared in detail some analysis to show there are three specific examples that show that small producer ownership shares don't work. One is in the 1985 pipeline settlement, three of the small owners had to be granted a 3 cent per barrel subsidy to come into the settlement because as small owners, they were penalized under the regulated terms. So it doesn't work for small owners very well. Again, if I'm right or wrong on this, and I believe I'm correct, but we should have been discussing it in the same manner, Mr. Chairman, that you were just asking the ideological question about divestiture. The dialogue hasn't taken place. Number two, the Maritime Overseas case demonstrates that the only potential independent tanker in the TAPS trade, it was a real tanker, but the owners used the terms of the tariff to keep that tanker out of the trade. They actually used the environmental rules, but they used Alyeska, which operates under the tariff, as the vehicle. The experience of both Amerada Hess and Mobil indicate that small ownership in the pipeline may not ensure that the pipeline is not a barrier to competition. These are two of the six companies that, of the major domestic companies, that sold production or discoveries capable of production during the 90s, and in five of the six cases, as you've heard me say before, the beneficiary was a major pipeline owner, ARCO or BP. The sixth buyer was Force Energy, now bankrupt. So we get to the end, and we've got 10 short days, and or maybe 2 weeks, and we're told or divestiture was in the governor's conditions. It was not. Well, where is the dialogue? I think we're going down the wrong road. I think the charter falls lamentably short of doing what it ought to do, and I think the process has been a shabby mockery of what a representative government ought to have. And I would charge you as my public representatives to do your duties as you see fit, and you may not share my views, but it is my hope that you will report back to the legislature that both the process and the fruits of this process are totally, totally inadequate to protect the future of the state and should be rejected. Thank you for your patience once more.
Can I
whisper? Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wondered if you tried to analyze whether or not the 5,000 barrels, you know, up to 5,000 barrels a day for dosers, where BP would have to buy the oil before, if you'd analyze that or what impact that might have.
I would love to give you the answer to that, Representative Curtula. I saw it for the first time over dinner 2 hours ago. And I think I'm a pretty conscientious individual, and I try to be pretty well well informed. And I'm rather sorry that I was not able to get to Exhibit C, and I was very surprised to find that at first glance, I was very pleasantly surprised. It's one of the few halfway decent things in that sorry charter, in my estimation. But once more, the point is, who are you going to rely on? And why haven't we had the time to deal out of all of this? Well, the point is, what did we get out of it? It's the future I'm concerned about. So thank
you. Tom Maloney.
Good evening, and thanks for having me here. My name is Tom Maloney, a resident of Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm employed by Beagle, Alaska. And I'm looking across at some guys that know a lot more about oil and gas than me, so that's always intimidating, especially the guy right across from me. Anyway, I'm here to testify tonight on behalf of a lot of our employees, and let's keep in mind this whole public process doesn't take place at Prudhoe Bay, doesn't take place at Kaparik, and a lot of our employees get to have zero participation whole process. So I'd like to try to speak on behalf of a few of them. Anyway, I'm 100% for this acquisition, and there's three main areas that I'd like to address tonight. The first is BP's commitment on local hire, procurement of goods and services, and contracting opportunities here in the state of Alaska. I'd like to first address the local hire issue. I first came to Alaska 22 years ago, and I was slightly south of the Golden Gate Bridge. I was down in Irvine, California. Like a lot of people that came up here and worked on a variety of projects, including others later in the 70s and then in the early 80s, I was a carpetbagger. I came up here, made the bucks, bought a lot of goods and services, and I can guarantee you, next to none of them were procured here in Alaska. What has BP done in the issue of local hire? I could give you numerous examples of what's occurred over the last 10 years. I could talk to you about sitting down with BP in 1992 and talking to them about some engineering work that we were interested in pursuing here. And lo and behold, today, through their efforts and other customers here in Alaska, we have 400 engineering and design people here in Alaska. That would not have occurred without BP support. 50 professional engineers here in the state of Alaska. In the issue of procurement of goods and services, there's been many times over the past few years that I've sat on panels with BP talking about BP's interest in procuring goods and services here in the state. this is not some new public relations campaign that's recently gone on. It's gone on for years. Contracting. I like to touch on just two items. Many people in the legislature and in the executive branch worked very hard to make the North Star thing a reality. Unfortunately, it was delayed for several years. What did that do? It cost contractors a lot of money. It cost the state a lot of money. It cost everybody a lot of money. The same thing will happen here with the delay in this acquisition, in my opinion. Unlike other people who have been up here and talked, I will talk about financial issues. I am a CPA, CMA, CFP, and I feel pretty well versed in discussing any financial issues that you might want to talk about. BP's agreement to go forward on North Star resulted in a lot of jobs here in Alaska. So the mixed module example, that on a clear day you could just about see from here if you had a window before it went out in late July, employed 200 Alaskans here. And that was a joint project managed by ARCO, BP funded. But it was just great for everything, and like Jack Lash previously said, that conjunction with the work down to Kiski did create a brand new industry here in Alaska. I'd be more than happy to share a nice video of that particular project with you if you're interested. So that's the first area, local hire, procurement of goods and services, and contracting for people right here in this state. That creates a tremendous multiplier effect for the economy of Alaska. But keep in mind the unemployment rate and some other things have gone up this year, a lot of it largely attributable to oil and gas workers being out of work. Second area I want to touch on briefly is health, safety, and environmental. I can think of no company anywhere in the world that has that kind of commitment to health, safety, and environmental issues. It's been an integral part of every contract that we've had with BP for a number of years, and we are incentivized to perform at the very highest level. And we think we do a relatively good job at that. The third area I wanted to touch on was community involvement. I don't care if it's United Way, Junior Achievement, or a host of other things I've been associated with. I can't think of any better corporate citizen than BP. Last week, we received an award for their Stepping Stones program. That's basically a program, I think, originally devised by the governor and some others to try to get some people that have been on welfare a little bit less fortunate than the rest of us into a working environment. And I've been happy to report that we've participated in that project. Well, you can only participate in that kind of a program, apprenticeship programs, native hire, native apprenticeship programs, if in fact you got work. In order to get work in this economy, you have to get rid of the uncertainty that's in it and get Alaska moving again. And that's about all I have to say. Anybody have any questions?
Questions? No questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Terry Monahan, is it Monahan?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Terry Monahan. I've worked in the oil industry in Alaska since 1978. I'm an Anchorage resident. And I would just like to encourage and endorse the immediate signature to the and implementation of the charter between the state and BP Amoco. I support the merger of ARCO into BP. I believe this is in Alaska's best interest. The legacy of Alaska's future lies in the approval of this merger. It provides for a robust economy. It provides for the quality of life that we all enjoy in Alaska because of the oil industry support. It provides for the care of the environment, which is so precious to us. Alaska needs this merger to continue to be the bright star of the U.S. that it currently is. We applaud the work of this committee, of BP Amoco, of ARCO, the governor's staff, for the work you're doing to facilitate the public process that will result in this merger. In closing, I'd like to say that we have a strong obligation, all of us, to get this merger behind us so that the oil and gas industry can be in the same current position that our neighbors are in North America, for example, in Calgary, where the return of gas and oil prices has provided for a robust economy in that area. And this merger, not moving forward, would deny us that position. Thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Dean? Thank you very much. Maynard Tapp.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before the committee. I'll just read from my prepared remarks. I'm Maynard Tapp, president of Hawk Construction Consultants, a citizen of Alaska, USA, member of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance, a group of about 300 companies that represent nearly 29,000 people in the state, a proud contractor with Alyeska Pipeline, BP, ARCO, and Unocal. Over 90% of my business comes from the oil companies. Hawk's job is to assist our clients in constructing cost-effective projects so that they can be competitive participants in the worldwide oil market. In 1998, BP spent over $953 million in capital projects, with 80% going to Alaska businesses. And Hawk had a good year, and I like good years. In 1999, during the fall in oil prices and the pending acquisition of ARCO by BP, the forecast for spending by BP was half of the 1998 expenditure. I've lost half of my people in this decline, and I know that my company is not alone. The talented people also are the resources of Alaska, but when their jobs go away, they go away. How can we buy Alaska and hire Alaska when companies and people who have built this industry and state are no longer here? Remember, the oil industry produced in the 1990s about 85% of the state revenues, and in 1998 it's forecasted to be 73%, 1999 66%, and the year 2000 66%, and the year 2000 63%. The TAPS pipeline throughput has declined from 2 million barrels per day during the Gulf War to about 1.1 million barrels. That's almost 50% reduction. This reduction is a strategic vulnerability for the United States and a financial catastrophe for the people in the state of Alaska. Alaska revenue crisis is only a partially related to the oil price. Our problem here is that we are not producing enough of it. We need to figure out a way where we can produce more oil. We need to encourage companies to give that kind of environment where they can trust the state to have a stable economic platform that they can then produce off of. If we can legislate the price of gas and we can legislate the price of oil, I'm sure we would have a really great economy here. If the government wants to, why is this a good deal for BP? And I also believe this is a good deal for Alaska for these reasons. They get a refining base and retail outlets in the western United States. They get a great place to live and do business where they have talented workforce and qualified companies. The reason that being good for Alaska also is that once we establish the oil market, it is unlikely that the refiners are going to want to retool to try to handle some other grade or quantity or quality of oil. By giving up an oil company the size of Unocal, with proven reserves in the biggest oil field in the United States, I think that's giving up quite a lot. I think BP has given a lot to the community. I think they're giving up a lot of their potential revenue. And I know in those circumstances myself, I would be reluctant to invest very much in something that I wasn't going to own. Why is this a good deal for Alaskans, BP, and the oil industry pay for over 70% of our government costs? They provide Alaskan jobs in their industries. Those people's incomes go into the Alaskan economy, providing jobs for a larger portion of the Alaskan businesses. It's economics 101. We can't wait another year. In fact, I wish we wouldn't wait another day. Let's put the Alaskan people and their companies back to work, and the only bad deal is no deal. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. Val Malone.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of this special committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Val Molyneux, and I've worked on the North Slope in various management roles in the development of most of the oil fields over the past 27 years. For 20 of those years, I've worked with VECO. My present position with VECO is President of Operations and Maintenance Services. My initial responsibilities working on the North Slope were to ensure Prudhoe Bay construction was completed in a timely manner to ensure first oil by April 1977. Prudhoe Bay, as you know, is the largest oil field in North America and remains so. During the 1980s, other fields were commissioned, and they included Kuparuk, which is the second largest oil field in the U.S., Milne Point in 1984, Lisburn in 1987, Endicott in 89, Point Mac in 1992. There are many other smaller satellite fields that are producing to some of these other facilities, including Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. The peak production from North Slope occurred in 1988 with a flow rate of 2.2 million barrels a day. Today, as you've already heard, the throughput is 1.2 million barrels a day. The majority of this reduction is the decline of Prudhoe Bay oil field, which has to date produced in excess 10 billion barrels of oil. Future prognosis is somewhere in an order of another 4 to 5 billion barrels. Prudhoe Bay continues to decline at approximately 10% per annum. That's huge. And to remain competitive, cost reductions are necessary, an absolute necessity. To that end, one operator for Prudhoe Bay makes good sense. BP and ARCO obviously recognize the need for one operator and have made the necessary steps to ensure that Prudhoe Bay remains competitive on a global basis. In August of this year, the Governor of Alaska requested competitive free market environment of all the oil resources. Both BP and ARCO respectively worked with the Governor and his staff and have developed an agreement that would allow other oil companies to produce and explore on the North Slope. These oil companies will evaluate their opportunities and risks involved and will compete with BP Amoco. I would respectfully request this agreement be signed as soon as possible. Delay in signing will only cause more confusion to the community, loss of work and corresponding Alaska jobs, sales of homes, and maybe a repeat of 1986. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this panel. Short and sweet.
Questions by members of the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Stevens.
Hi, my name is Steve Stevens. I'm with Alaska Interstate Construction. First, I'd like to state that I'm a born and raised Alaskan, as well as a native Alaskan. And I feel that the BP merger or buyout, or however you'd like to phrase that, would benefit not only the state as far as the dollars go, but the children of the state. I have two sons and daughters, and with the BP buyout, I feel that they would benefit from all the investments that BP has made within the communities, not only the communities, but as well as the villages. In delaying this, is not only going to set back Alaska's economy, but it will set back the working man's economy as well. You know, we depend on the benefits from oil field construction, and as far as the delay of this merger, I think the entire state will feel that. is especially the working man. You know, we depend on the project. We feel the delay. But we're not elected. We're not appointed. We work because the work is there. When the work doesn't happen, we're not on a state salary or anything. We sit home. And it's very important to me, for one, that this not be delayed because of the projects that it will be holding up in the future. Yeah, that's all I have to say. Appreciate your time.
Questions?
Thank you.
Doug Schmaker?
Hello, my name's Doug Smaker. I'm from the community of Fort Yukon, Alaska. I've been born and raised there 39 years, and I'm for the BP-ARCO merger. I am a construction worker, and I believe it'll benefit all the Alaska's economy and the people of Alaska. In Fort Yukon, the unemployment rate is very high, and ever since BP started hiring locally and hiring local companies, I've seen a large increase of employment, especially in that little community. I believe that state shouldn't delay this much any longer and continue the process with BP and ARCO merger. That's all I have. I just wanted to voice my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Vince Goran?
Comes from prosperity caused by the oil industry. We do a little business with Red Dog Mine. Otherwise, we do no business with mining. There's no business with timber from our company. No business with fishing. No business with tourism. Our business is primarily rooted in the oil industry. Because of worldwide economic conditions, large companies are merging, and merging is inevitable. ARCO and BP have found it expedient to merge. They will control or own 3/4 of the oil production in Alaska. And we're right to be concerned about that. This is a monopoly, more or less. Will it harm us or will it benefit us? The governor and the legislature have negotiated an agreement with BP and ARCO, Charter for Development of the North Slope, Charter for the Development of the Alaska North Slope, 8-year agreement. I believe the governor of the legislature has addressed our concerns and have come up with a good agreement that provides for continuing competition, company responsibility, renewed exploration, development and production of North Slope oil and gas. I urge the governor, attorney general, commissioner of natural resources, and the commissioner of revenue to sign the agreement, and let's get on with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Is it Wade Schnabel?
Hello, I'm Wade Schnabel. I've lived here about 25 years, and I'd just like to go on the record that I'm all for BP buying out ARCO. ARCO wants to sell, and BP wants to buy. Both BP and ARCO have been good to me and my family over the years, and it looks to me like BP is doing a lot to prove their good intentions, which I don't feel they need to do. And I just think the longer this thing drags on, the longer a lot of my friends and neighbors will be out of work. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Let's see. Tom Lakish came back. We'll cover that.
Thank you very, very much for this opportunity to testify. My name is Tom Lockish. My address and phone number are on the sign-in sheet. The basic underpinning here is, and question to be answered is can we believe BP to fulfill its commitments that it has put in its advertisements and put in this charter agreement? And I submit that this is more of the same promises that we got when the pipeline was being constructed. We were promised double-hull tankers back then, and we didn't get a single one new built from BP. And we had promises after the Exxon Valdez from the oil companies that there would be double-hull tankers. We didn't get them. Now, last night we were told by the governor that BP would replace existing tankers 1 year earlier than required by the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. Well, that's rather curious because essentially what the governor will be doing is signing an agreement that has already been breached. Next year, BP will lose the Overseas Alaska. I believe it's the Alaska. Yep. Oh, no. Overseas Alaska. And in December, it's required to be retired by Open 90. So unless BP can build a double hull tanker in the next 42 days, it's already breached its agreement. There will also be over 500,000 deadweight tons of ARCO tankers that will be retired next year and only 250,000 replaced. So less than half of the tankers will be replaced. And it's real important to notice that this lack of planning by BP is, in fact, a clear writing on the wall that BP is not intending to expand its production and throughput. Another indication is its refusal to pay for vapor recovery at berth 3. You can't ship oil without a berth. Right now, there is a deadline by 2001 that berth 3 will have to be closed because their waiver will expire for loading uncontrolled at berth 3. And so they can't handle the throughput that they've projected. So the question is, can we believe BP's promises when we have this type of writing on the wall? They argued with DEC and EPA to avoid putting vapor recovery on berth 3 because they said they didn't have the throughput to warrant it and that they wanted exemption for the few years left before the decline would make it irrelevant. Well, they made that statement during low oil prices. The oil prices come up. And lo and behold, we have another prediction of an increase in production that will exceed that of the 97 and 98 projection. Except you can't ship it because you don't have vapor recovery. So where is BP's environmental commitment? They said that they needed the exemption, and now they're refusing to load their tankers at berth 3 because it doesn't have vapor recovery. So what they're doing is keeping revenues out of the state of Alaska's coffers because they're refusing to load oil. They made the excuse, oh, well, we'll get it down there eventually, and if we could tell our creditors we'll pay you eventually, then that might work. But that's not the way the real world works. If you don't ship it, you don't get paid. If you ship it later, you get paid later. That means you can't buy something now because you're not getting paid now. So we have to have a serious commitment here to actually putting their money where their mouth is. If they're saying that they're going to replace existing tankers, where's the replacement for the Overseas Ohio? Where are the replacements for the extra capacity that the two biggest tankers that visit Valdez will need to replace them next year? There's only two Millennium-class tankers. They're half the size, less than half the size, of the tankers that are going to be retired. The third one will come on the year after that. ARCO, they're saying that they have the same commitment as ARCO. Well, ARCO, and then that they would there would be a fulfillment of ARCO's plan to build new Millennium-class double-hull tankers. Well, ARCO knew that they had to retire all of this capacity, and they had an option to build two more. And that's and ARCO would have not only picked up that option to build two more Millennium-class tankers, but they probably would have built another two or three on top of that to replace their retiring capacity. We don't have the fulfillment of ARCO's plans because they want to replace it with Cape-class, cheaper Cape-class tankers that don't have the 10-foot double hulls, that don't have the 3,000 horsepower bow thruster. They're not equivalent, and the reference to Millennium or Cape-class should be deducted to say Millennium class, because that's what competition brought us. And speaking to ARCO executives, I was told that, yes, indeed, the reason why they built the Millennium class was to compete with the other oil producers for customers that were sensitive to environmental pollution. Well, if there's anybody that's sensitive to environment, to marine pollution, it's got to be Alaskans, because we suffered the greatest spill of all in the history of this continent. And so it was partially to satisfy West Coast customers and partially to satisfy Alaskans. That's what competition did for us. Now we don't have that competition. Now we have a company that's giving us false promises that they're going to fulfill the ARCO's plans to build. They're not. They're not. They haven't picked up the option. They haven't. They're trying to substitute their own lesser standard for the Millennium class that ARCO has set. And they want to know, so they said they don't know of a company that's more environmentally sensitive. That's awful funny because they're buying one that was more environmentally sensitive. And then that means that they won't have it. In other words, this is just like Netscape and Microsoft. Netscape came out with a better browser. The best way to get rid of that competition is to go buy the company and then take away the choice of consumers who would have had the choice between Netscape and Internet Explorer. And so this is the exact same situation. They bought the designs for the Millennium-class tankers, and then they're going to give us Cape-class tankers. They won't commit to a number of tankers. In the last 2 years, seven tankers are retired, not have been replaced. Next year, three will be retired. This is just BP and ARCO tankers, by the way. Between 2004 and 2006, another nine will be retired. We don't see these plans, and we need a definite commitment that BP, if it wants to follow through on its very bold words, that they have to have a firm commitment to build at least nine tankers by actually 2006 rather than 2007, because of current projections have a peak now about 2004 or 5. So we need to get these tankers online quickly if we want to get the ink back for our checks. They haul the ink back up in the tankers that haul the oil down. We don't want that ink to be tainted with the blood of our coastal ecosystems or our coastal communities, and we know that the Millennium class is the best tanker to do that. And we'd like to know why now we have to accept a lesser standard. It's clear from BP's actions that they're not going to haul back our ink because they're not building the tankers to haul it in. They don't have the berth to load the oil in. How can we put this? And if ARCO's word is so good, what's the difference between signing their environmental commitments and not? The only possible reason why they won't allow a legally binding commitment for those Section 2 environmental and community commitments is because they don't intend to follow through on them, just like they didn't intend to follow through on their double-hull tankers. They went to court, Chevron versus Hammond, and we lost our tankers. They, if it's not legally binding on them, they will not follow through on it. And that's what we found. If they have any chance whatsoever through their intertanko suit or Coast Guard lobbying or so forth to weasel out of their environmental commitments, they will. It's just the way they work. They'd rather pay their lawyers than to get the improvements. I know. I've been litigating against them with DEC for their contingency plans for years. And they are still not satisfied. There are still outstanding conditions of approval from both the VMT and the tanker plans. Where is their environmental commitment? And instead of negotiating to settle these concerns of the public, they litigate. They'd rather pay their lawyers because it's cheaper. So we need to see that they put their money where their mouth is. As far as this being an open process and public process, it is abundantly clear that DNR has jurisdiction in this matter, which has been usurped by the governor. There's no question that it is DNR's jurisdiction to deal with excessive lease holdings, with lease sales and so forth, except we haven't had the public process. There's been no set of findings by Commissioner Shively. He's clearly came here today and told you of his involvement, and yet this isn't a public involvement as part of the Department of Natural Resources, which is required by law. This is the governor usurping Commissioner Shively's jurisdiction and duly influencing his decisions in this matter in a process that has not followed the proper administrative procedure. That administrative procedure should entail minimally findings by the department, an ability for the public to give comment to the department, and an ability to appeal the DNR's commissioner's decision, both administratively and in a court of law. That isn't happening. What we're doing is getting railroaded and having this is the colony. We have had our due process rights usurped. We are the last colony of Great Britain because we have just lost our administrative processes. The fact that there are commitments here relating to DEC's jurisdiction over waste pits, That's clearly required by law not to store hazardous waste in uncontained and in an unapproved manner. Yet they don't want to make a legal commitment to it. And as a matter of fact, the governor wants us to defer all rights to legal recourse. It says clearly in the language. You know, although they try and say that, oh, it won't affect it, then why did they put language in there that says it will not be pursued in a court of law? This is clearly an attempt to try and usurp both DEC's and DNR's jurisdiction in the matter. There should be full administrative procedures followed with the ability of the public to present their testimony to the commissioners and to appeal their decisions if necessary, if their decisions do not comply with law. And it's clear that it was mentioned last night that the governor did not get his advice of counsel, that he had hired a very high power firm and never got their report. And it is clear that the Attorney General's Vitello's advice is not that sound. He said that last night the charter for the community and environment are not antitrust issues and are not restraint of trade issues and therefore should not be subject to judicial review. Well, that's clearly not the case with regard to the tankers. The tankers are clearly part of the supply system of a vast and monopolistic, vertically integrated company. If there are not a divestiture or at least a commitment to have the supply available, then that restrains supply, artificially restrains supply to the West Coast. That affects West Coast markets. Just like refusing to load a tanker, it causes the spot price to go up artificially. The only excuse that BP could offer for not putting vapor recovery in or not buying tankers is if their price of oil was so low that they did not have the margin for profit that would normally be acceptable. Well, the point at which that happens is about $9 a barrel or less. Because that in their prices for their tankers that they take out of the tariff, in the prices for the pipeline, there's already incorporated profit of 80 to 100%, and everything above $9 is strictly gravy. And so, there is no economic excuse for refusing to provide those other facets of the vertically integrated supply chain. There has to be a full complement of pipeline facilities to allow it to ship the maximum production. It's not available now.
3 minutes for each of us. Individual
citizens. I didn't get paid to come here, champ.
Yeah, neither did I.
And there has to be a full complement of tankers that will allow the supply of oil to reach the West Coast. That is restraint of trade, not to have the tankers, not to have the berth available. And so this clearly should be addressed, if nothing else, so that we get this agreement through the FTC. I would like to see a merger that has all of the proper concessions to restraint of trade and our lawful requirements. Lawful requirements are cleaning up your mess on the North Slope. Lawful requirements are properly training your tanker crews, which, by the way, have been speeding through Prince William Sound. And so it's incumbent upon the legislature and the governor at this time to make a clean slate, put it before BP, get an agreement, and then and consider all the restraint of trade issues, and then we won't have the FTC stop the merger. We need to have a clear, clean slate before we sign off on something like this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Ken Yaki?
Hi, my name is Ken Yaki. I'm an engineer here in Alaska. I just came here to tell you on behalf of my family and myself that I think BP is a good corporate citizen. I think this deal is a good deal for Alaska. I've been in Alaska 11 years, and I plan to stay here many more if I can continue to support my family. I'm glad that the governor got a chance to negotiate this deal with BP, and I believe it's a good deal, like I said. Furthermore, I believe that the pieces of the pie get larger, the more money is available for exploration and development. So let's get on with it. The state has had its chance, and the more government agencies that are involved in the deal, the more convoluted the process, I think, becomes. The take-home message is that the last time the government was too slow to react, in the case of North Star, it ended up causing construction to stop, and it cost me a job and my family food on the table. If government continues to stand in the way of development, there's the lifeblood of the state, the oil money will go elsewhere. So I implore you to get on with the process and get oil back in the pipeline. Thank you.
Questions? Bill McLaughlin?
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak with you. My name is Bill McLaughlin. I'm here to represent myself as well as Peak Oilfield Service Company. I've lived in Alaska for 37 years. I came here, finished high school, and I've worked in the oil industry my entire life. I hope to be able to retire here and live here for many years after. I raised my children here. They were both schooled here. And my daughter still lives here. My son has gone away. The Peak is owned equally by Neighbors Industries and Cook Inlet Region, Inc. And I'm here to support the state's agreement or the accord that has been put together thus far. And while we may not like all of the details, we need to get Alaska back to work. At Peak alone, we've laid off about 400 employees over the past 12 months. These are good, highly trained, highly skilled people who earn a good living. These are Alaska residents, Alaskans who have had to take a dramatic cut in salary to find work elsewhere, or they've had to move outside. Now, others will talk about competition, natural gas, and the environment tonight, and I want to talk about putting our people back to work. We've listened to a lot of discussion about the benefits of consolidating the Prudhoe Bay unit. Most of this talk has been centered around economies of scale and reduced costs to attract continuing capital flow. I want to talk about another benefit, one that will remove a thorny situation and put Alaskans back to work. Surrounding Prudhoe Bay are numerous satellite fields, small accumulations, typically less than 100 million barrels each, and because they're close to existing infrastructure, they can be brought to production fairly quickly. These satellites are projected to play a big role in stemming the North Slope's overall decline. Satellite production from the North Slope central area is estimated to be about 35,000 barrels a day in 2003. And about 181,000 barrels by 2010. Combining Prudhoe Bay under a single owner will remove one of the biggest obstacles in bringing these small fields into production and will be a fast way to put Alaskans back to work. The biggest problem with satellites has been coming to agreement on terms to share production facilities. These have been time-consuming and difficult to negotiate. In fact, it took 5 years to negotiate the first facility sharing in Prudhoe. While the same owners are usually typically involved, their ownership percentage in satellite fields are usually different from their ownership in production facilities. These different interests have different goals, particularly for satellite producers. Because the fields are small, development costs are relatively high, about $2.50 a barrel, as opposed to less than $2 a barrel at Alpine. Consolidating ownership at Prudhoe brings the competing interests into alignment, reduces the overall cost of developing and producing satellite fields. That's a win-win situation for everyone. More jobs, more production, more state revenues. Bringing Prudhoe's satellite fields online now is just one of many positive means that this agreement between Alaska and BP can put together. While some of the other benefits will take many months to realize, a consolidated Prudhoe Bay will provide work now for Alaskans, including, I hope, some of Peak's employees that we've had to lay off. While the new players on the slope study the land, Prudhoe Bay satellite fields will be pumping oil, keeping the existing facilities up and operating and making sure plenty of oil flows through the pipeline. Let's continue this agreement now and bring the North Slope back to life. Alaskans can't afford to wait forever. In closing, I'd like to ask that you work expediently on this. It would be a shame for it to go on for several months. As I said earlier, we've got a lot of people we'd like to put back to work, neighbors, friends, and previous employees. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Dave Scarborough.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. My name is Dave Scarborough. I represent Air Logistics of Alaska. We're a Fairbanks-based helicopter operator. I'm here to speak in support of the BP-ARCO merger and the charter. I've got a statement I'd just like to read. Air Logistics of Alaska is a Fairbanks-headquartered aviation services company with additional offices located in Dead Horse, Valdez, and Anchorage. Air Logistics is currently in its 18th year as the helicopter transportation services vendor to Alyeska Pipeline Services Company and also provides contract helicopter support to BPXA and other oil industry firms on the North Slope. All of our current permanent employees are Alaska residents. Air Logistics supports the BPXA-ARCO merger. We believe that it is vitally important that Alaska's North Slope resources are seen as competitive and predictable as regards international oil markets, and also that industry can foresee a reasonable and relatively acceptable level of risk concerning exploration and development activities within our state. We also believe that the Charter for Development is a practical agreement and urge the administration to move forward in an expeditious manner in order to forestall further North Slope project delays and to enable service sector workforce to return to their jobs. And as regards the charter, I had one comment or thought, and I haven't really seen in the media any details concerning how the approximately $2 million that BP is going to endow the university is going to be spent. As you know, one of the important issues facing the transportation sector, as well as the process industry, is the graying of our current workforce. In the very near future, we will all confront varying degrees of difficulty in replacing our retiring workers with younger, trained, and motivated employees. Perhaps consideration could be given to utilizing a portion of this funding in support of state-sponsored or joint state industry vocational and or technical training programs that will assist our businesses to meet this challenge. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Questions, John? Let's see.
Dietrich. Hi, my name is John Dietrich, and I am the general manager of Brooks Range Supply. I would just like to say for the record that although I wish I was. I'm a salaried employee, and I am not being paid to be here tonight, but for all the hours I put in, sometimes it's nice to be hourly. Brooks Range Supply is a core supplier to BP and the Prudhoe Bay oil fields. Our store is located in Dead Horse. And starting last spring, we had to reduce our daily staffing from 10 to 5 employees. This was due to the spending decreases that occurred on the slope. We are a relatively small company, but we have at the peak about 25 employees, and that includes office people in town, and we're down to about 16 folks at this time. The spending has really decreased over the past year. 1999 has not been at all like 1998. And when this spending is down, the contractors who we rely on, as well as the oil companies, they are leaving skeleton crews on the slope to keep their businesses going. But with less people on the slope, that means less spend on the slope and less money flowing into our stores, into our store. We need at least one company to become active again, ASAP, to get our people back to work and get money flowing back into the Alaskan economy. I fully support the merger agreement as a fair deal for the state and BP, and as a way to get the oil, our family incomes, and state revenues flowing again, ASAP. The idea of new players on the slope is very exciting. Although I was heavily in favor of BP's original proposal to acquire all of ARCO and spend $5 billion over 5 years, I am now equally in favor of this new agreement. If BP believes it to be a good deal, and our elected governor believes it to be a good deal, I believe enough time has been wasted analyzing this, and it's time to get back to work. I want my employees to get back to earning their regular salaries and work the shifts on the slope for which they were hired versus the reduced shifts they've had to go on since last April. And I want their families to enjoy the income to which they were accustomed. I want to rehire those folks that I laid off last spring and get them back to work, such that their families can get back to their accustomed lifestyle and quality of life. Those prepared remarks I had, I wanted to just kind of ad-lib a little bit myself. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born here in 1966. I left to go to school in Michigan and felt the opportunities were so great that I'd come back here. That was even in light of, while I was at school, was the time when this place went into the tank. And where I'm going with this is I'm not a person who works in the oil industry because I was transferred up here or because it started up here. I'm an accountant by background. I took a job as an accountant with Brooks Range Supply and worked my way up to become the general manager. And this was because of local spend and local hire. This occurred. I mean, if BP and ARCO didn't spend money locally, Brooks Range Supply probably would cease to be, and we wouldn't be hiring Alaskans to work in this industry. I'd also like to just counter with two points of things that I've kind of heard out there. You know, there's concern that, you know, with one player in town that they may not be the corporate citizen that they've been, and I don't think competition has caused, over the years, BP and ARCO to be the corporate citizens that they have. I think they're the corporate citizens, and they give to these organizations because they believe it's the right thing to do. And I don't see, they make commitments in the charter, they've made commitments to doing this, and I think they'll continue to do this. And I think even if it wasn't in the charter and it wasn't a part of the agreement, you still continue to see this. I mean, you see BP's hand in about darn near every charitable organization in this state. I'd also like to just point out, you know, there's been some naysayers talking about that, well, if BP controls the entire field, that they may cease to spend or develop or spend more money. But I would just like, you know, to remind everybody that they're making a $30 billion investment here, and this is primarily because of the Alaskan operations of ARCO. And there's not many people out there I know that would make a $30 billion investment and just let it sit there and rust. So I don't think that's much of a concern. You had your chance, Bill. To summarize, this is a good deal for the state, a good deal for our BP, and a good deal for Brooks Range Supply, our employees, and my family and my children. It needs to not get bogged down in any more scrutiny, and it cannot be changed. This will further slow down the process. I urge all of you in the government sector to allow this to go forward in its present format, and let's all get back to making money again. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
When did the decline in BP contracting start? Was it sort of
January, February, March, and then by April you had to lay off? You mentioned April.
It was about April, and I'm not necessarily saying there was a decline in BP contracting. I was just saying there was a decline in the activity on the locals. And I can't speak to the contract, but I can just speak to the fact that when there was less money being spent on the slope due to whatever reasons, we were forced to lay off a number of employees.
And that was March,
that
April?
That was in April, April, May.
Slow decline since the beginning or a drop-off in April?
It was a relatively rapid drop-off in April. And we have, like I say, I mean, we have had to lay off employees. We've had to stretch out our shifts of our folks on the slope. You know, they're not working as many weeks on as they are off.
A steep drop in April, and it's then sort of been flat low, or is it?
It's been relatively flat low. I mean, fortunately, the Alpine project's been continuing, and that's been a bright spot for us. But our business depends on projects. I mean, it depends on day in and day out production is beneficial. I mean, no question about it. But we see the big booms when Alpine pipelines are built, when North Star pipelines are built, when rigs are out poking holes in the ground, because all the contractors, the Halliburton, Schlumberger's, on and on and on, the Vicos and Peaks and APCs, I mean, they're all working. I mean, the drill rigs are important in the exploration and the projects, new field development. And we need to keep encouraging that through the infrastructure and through our partnering with the oil industry. I mean, whether we like it or not, we've come to depend on the oil industry. Whether that was good or bad, that's irrelevant. But I don't think there's anybody in the state that can say that we haven't in some facet benefited from the oil industry. So we're fortunate to have such a strong industry and grappled on enough.
And when the BP-ARCO merger was announced, which was June?
No, April, February, somewhere, February, March, April.
April 1st. One point that you made that I particularly agree with, and it kind of troubles me about this whole process. It's not BP's fault. I don't know where to necessarily lay the blame, and it's not significant in the overall scheme of things. But you said that BP had been a corporate citizen contributing to every kind of cause, as has ARCO, and I agree with that. I think putting a percentage into an agreement to tie it back to social issues in the state cheapened the companies and the recipients in a way that was a mistake. It's not significant. It's not a reason to oppose anything, support anything. But I think that was a serious mistake because it made caring about people some kind of an entitlement to be negotiated. And that was a lousy mistake. Personal opinion.
Well, that may or may not be, but I mean, the two parties negotiating felt that was the way to go.
Yeah.
And I'll just,
yeah, I don't know.
I'm
I don't know where it came from, and it's not. I mean, we're talking about a very, very small number, but I think the things that have been done by both companies would have been done without that, and by putting that in there, it makes people on the receiving side and the giving side no longer receiving and giving, but paying and taking.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ruth Moulton.
Thank you. I'm here mainly to speak about the process, which I feel is much too brief. I spent 7 hours at the museum Tuesday evening in order to testify. Much of the testimony I heard that night was very similar to what I'm hearing today, in that it really does not go into the details of the charter. It concerns jobs, which are important. It concerns contracts, which are important. It does not concern the resource, which belongs to every citizen of this state by the Constitution. I think the citizens have a right and that their government has an obligation to get the information to them over a period of time and in a manner which allows them to fully comprehend an event that is going to impact them, their children, and probably their grandchildren, if not the generation after that. I'm really concerned with the speed of the process. I think it simply, we have all seen things in history which went fast and went fast for a purpose. And time was the thing that really brought about the changes that were good, the information that was good, the time that allowed people to know what it was that was happening. Most citizens in this state do not understand the charter. I have read it all. I learned more Tuesday night from listening to the late testimony, which did not have to do with contracts and the fact that I'm an employee and that BP is a good corporate neighbor and BP has been here for a long time and is here to stay, and I've been here for a long time and I'm here to stay. It did not concern that. It was people who had really taken time to analyze the charter and have the information and speak to specific concerns with it. And I simply hope that you will slow down the process to any extent you can and see that information gets out. You know, I don't know how much BP has spent on its advertising campaign telling us that it's a new day, but if that amount of money had been spent getting out good, concrete information, I would have a lot more faith in the process moving as it is. So I hope you will just allow time and let the information get out there and be analyzed by the citizens. It's their oil. It's their resource. It belongs to them. And I think what they get for it and the manner in which it's handled is very important to them. And as I said, to their children and their grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you. Bruce Weiler.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity to come and talk to you. I'm here as a private citizen of District 10. Although I am employed by BP, I'm not associated with this group over here in the front row, although one of them does happen to be my boss's boss's boss. And his boss is in the audience a little bit further back. But I've been a resident of Alaska for about 9 years, and although it pales in comparison to some of the earlier testifiers who've been here 30-plus, it is as long as Representative Berkowitz.
Not quite.
I think we both moved here in 1990.
I'll count it as 10.
But I want to urge this committee to approve the charter as it stands. Don't require special session. Don't delay it till the legislature convenes in January. Let's get this thing over and done with. You have much more important issues to deal with, such as state spending, the budget, subsistence. I mean, the list could go on and on. Thousands of industry workers are stuck in limbo waiting for this deal to get done. None of the companies are going to commit to spending the millions and millions of dollars it takes to get development, get going back full steam until this deal is done and until FTC approval is received. Now, consolidation on the North Slope shouldn't have surprised anyone. As you've heard tonight, and I'm sure many times before, production is half of what it was at its peak. Costs have continued to escalate. Pressures on margins have just been increasing exponentially. And so it should not have been a shock come April 1st that there was going to be a consolidation. I feel that it was fortuitous that I happened to work for the one who's going to still be here. And I know, having been through a reduction process in January, I really can feel for the folks at ARCO, because I know what they're going through, and the sooner we get it over and done with, the better for everybody. Now, I feel that the governor and the attorney general, and this is where you can insert your own verb, some will say negotiate, I prefer extorted, a lot of value out of BP to get this deal done. And so I think that the state's interests are more than adequately protected. I think that your revenue is going to be fine. Let's get on with it. I urge you again to go ahead and approve this. Don't let the rest of the legislature get a hold of this. Recommend to them, get it done so we can get on with our business. Thank you very much.
Are there questions? Okay, we don't have anyone else signed up to testify. That being the case, we will close the...
Mr. Chairman, we have two in Juneau to speak.
That's true, we do. Okay, we're done with the testimony here, so we won't have further sign-up here.
We do have Randy Wanamaker and Murray.